Okay, good morning everyone. Welcome to the Thursday morning series. This is a standalone, but it's also a continuation of the last one in the series that we had called No Worries, where we're dealing with anxious thinking and negative thoughts and so on. So today we're going to be doing a Pesach formula to achieve freedom, inner freedom, and freedom specifically from anxiety, from anxious thoughts, from negative thinking, and so on. I just want to, before I start, the Thursday morning class next term is definitely going to go ahead. I'm just not sure if it's going to be at Binah or on technology once again, but we will start, please God, the 29th of April. That's the Thursday, 29th of April. Okay. Now, just as introduction, we spent, for those that are only tuning in today, I'm just going to give a brief sort of synopsis of what we've been doing till now, and then launching to today's discussion. So until now, we spent the last 7 weeks discussing letting go of negative thinking, negative emotional responses, both reactions that we have to things that have happened, and also worrying and being anxious about things that are happening in the future. And essentially, after the whole discussion and after all the different discussions that we had, it boils down to a few principles. Number one, the first principle that we discussed is that the personality that we have, people's personality live, although we have many components to who we are. We have seichel, we have intellect, we have the subconscious, we have emotion, and we have behavior, action. We talked about the personality being manifested in our emotions, midos. In other words, the way we emotionally respond to something, that's who we are. That's our personality coming out. However, we talked about the second thing is that what stimulates the midos, what stimulates our emotion, is cognition. In other words, the way we think, our intellect, the mind. And we talked a lot about the principle of moach shalit al halev, the ability, the unique ability that human beings have, that the mind rules the heart, and the mind can guide the heart. And also the second thing is action. We talked about what the famous Sefer HaChinuch talks about, that achrei ha-ma'asim nimshach ha-levavot, that the heart follows action. So our personality is in our emotion, but it's stimulated and guided and controlled somewhat, on the one hand by our thinking process, our beliefs, our cognitive process, and on the other hand, the way we behave. We discussed that our thought process is guided by our beliefs. And therefore, when we change our thinking, and we talk a lot about Sarah Edelman's book on change your thinking, when we change our thinking, it's very, very much about disputing our beliefs. On a superficial level, just our belief system, things like everything has to go right, people should always say the right thing. We have to dispute those beliefs, otherwise we're unable to control our emotion. And on a deeper level, we talked about disputing our beliefs by using the value system that we have as Jews, as faith, emunah, bitachon, believing hashgacha pratit, that everything is by divine providence, believing that every moment comes with its own mission and purpose. And even when things go wrong and don't work out the way we want them to, those moments still have a purpose and we can give them meaning and depth and so on. And last week, we talked a lot about worrying for the future, and we developed a whole approach using Jewish mindfulness to create a formula where every day counts, even when the days don't work out the way we think they were going to work out, like the time we're in now. But nevertheless, we learn to make every day a meaningful process. We learn to understand that circumstances might change, but our belief system is the same, our quest for meaning is the same, and our ability to give each day meaning and purpose remains the same. Okay. Now, after all of this, even at a very deep level, this all becomes possible because of one thing. It all becomes possible because deep-rooted in who we are, deep-rooted in our soul, is the ability to choose. The ability to choose and to exercise what we call personal freedom. In other words, one of the hardest things for us to change is our emotional responses. We all have our emotional weaknesses. We all have personality weaknesses. But yet, as human beings, one of the deepest things that we possess is the ability to choose, the ability to make a choice. We talked about this a lot when we did a series on the book called The Choice by Edith Eger. But human beings, fundamental to Jewish thought is this idea that we have a choice. We can choose. We can think differently. We can access the very deep subconscious belief system that we all have. We can connect to the soul. We can dispute our belief thinking patterns. We can choose to engage in certain behaviors, and therefore we can choose to guide, channel, and change our emotional responses. Because that is what real freedom means. Freedom means that we are free to choose the right over wrong. We are free to from within. We're not free to control the circumstances, but we are free to choose, as we've spoken about many times, to choose what is right over wrong, to choose the most effective process rather than the ineffective, to choose productive ways of living instead of destructive ways of living, and to choose morality rather than things that aren't moral, to choose effective rather than what is ineffective. Because this is really what Pesach is all about. And we're coming out of Pesach. Today, of course, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's the first day of the month of Nisan, the first day of the month of redemption, the month which began the journey of the Jewish people achieving exodus from Egypt and becoming God's nation. And this is the month to exercise and to tap into the energy of real freedom. Because living with meaning and purpose, even when things are challenging, can only really develop when we understand this process of not defining ourselves by external circumstances, but rather defining ourselves by who we are, our values, our soul, and acknowledging that we have the ability to choose, and it's in our control to choose how we react and how we choose to react to various circumstances. And of course, as we said, this is the whole concept of Pesach, and it's Pesach every year, not just Pesach as a memory for what happened 3,000 years ago. But as we say at the Seder, every time we sit down to the Seder, we say, Bechol dor vador. In every generation, Chayav Adam lirot et asmo, a person is obligated to see himself as if he himself is going out of Egypt. In other words, the idea of sitting down by the Seder is to experience freedom, to experience what it means to be really free, and to tap into that energy of being free to choose the right path. Now, this is what the Seder is all about. You know, we've talked about many times that throughout the ages, Jews have conducted a Seder in the most bizarre circumstances. And I think I've shared this with you before, but as a child, I remember reading stories about how people celebrated the Seder even in the camps and during the Holocaust, under incredibly difficult circumstances. And as a child, before I learned what this really means, I always wondered, I always questioned about why, how can they celebrate a Seder like that? What kind of freedom is that? They were in the most extreme circumstances of that which is exactly the opposite of freedom, or so one would imagine. And it's only later when I started to learn and understand the concepts of Pesach, I realized, no. Freedom, as Viktor Frankl talks about a lot, freedom is the choice of the person. And perhaps when they sat in the camps, they were ultimately free. They were really free. It could even be that when we sit down to our Seder, or in previous years, we sit down to our Seder with all the comforts and all the conveniences, we might not be free. We might be in a setting of freedom, but we might not be free. We might be very enslaved and incarcerated within our own shortcomings, within our own temptations, with our own weaknesses. So Pesach is about really understanding true freedom, and true freedom can be exercised everywhere. Now, of course, this year, our Seder is going to be a bit different. Or so it seems. God can perform a miracle anytime, and this whole thing can come to an end very quickly. But following the natural course of events, it's very possible that our Seder is going to be different this year. Thankfully and thank God, we have our families, we still have food to eat, we have many, many freedoms, we're not in anywhere near the situation of people that celebrated the Seder under very, very negative circumstances. But nevertheless, we're going to be celebrating a Seder with weaknesses, with differences. Smaller Seders, not being able to connect with family on a broader level. Preparing and cleaning for Pesach and getting into the whole Pesach mode in circumstances which are a bit more difficult. So therefore, it's this year which we really have to understand and appreciate what a meaningful Seder is, what Pesach is really all about. A Pesach is about celebrating a Seder, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, about being free internally, coming from within. So what I wanted to do today is, on the topic of freedom, and related to what we're going through now, is share with you a couple of thoughts, a couple of ideas to do with the Seder, and how it relates to the whole concept of freedom, and freedom from being held back by weaker or perhaps negative circumstances. The first idea I want to share with you is something I think I shared many, many years ago, but I want to just revisit it. And it relates to what I call the four prisons, leaving the four prisons. And I'm sharing with this you, I once heard this idea from a relative of mine, and he talked about that this time of the year, before and after Purim, leading up to Pesach, we completed reading in shul on Shabbat. We didn't get to read the fourth one because this last Shabbat was we all at home. But nevertheless, there are four special portions that we read around this time of the year, normally two before Purim, two after Purim. They're always read around this time of the year. And in some sense, they kind of correspond to the process leading up to Pesach. In fact, some of the commentaries say that the four parashiyot, the four special portions, correspond to the four cups of wine that we drink on Pesach. What are these four? Let me just briefly explain what these four special portions are, and then we'll see how they relate to the concept of freedom and the concept of Pesach. So the first one is the parasha called Shkalim, which is where we read about the yearly half-shekel tax that was given yearly in the times of the temple. That's the first one. Now, it was normally given around this time of the year, so on a simple level, that's why we read it during this month, leading up to Pesach, because that's the time of the year that used to be given before the month of Nisan. The second special portion we read is the one of Zachor, where we remember the evil nation of Amalek and how they attacked the Jewish people when they were coming out of Egypt on the way to Mount Sinai. The nation of Amalek, and God commands us to remember it. And if we read that portion every single year, and we remember what Amalek did to the Jewish people, and we remember that ultimately Amalek had to be destroyed, and what that means spiritually is destroying the spiritual Amalek within us, and we'll talk about that in a couple of moments. The third portion is Para. Para means the laws of red heifer. We know that in the laws of purity and impurity, which, because we don't have a temple today, we don't observe many of those laws today, but the concept is that when we come into contact with a dead body, we become impure. And especially around this time of the year, when all the Jews used to bring the Paschal Lamb, the Korban Pesach before Pesach, so they were not able to do that if they were impure, and therefore people used to engage in the red heifer. The red heifer was the special mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people, that if you have a cow that is completely red, it needs to be slaughtered as a sacrifice, burnt, and the ashes were then mixed with a special solution of water. That water was sprinkled upon the people who were impure, and that's what purified the people and made them ready then to be able to bring sacrifices, including the Paschal Lamb before Pesach. And finally, the fourth one is HaChodesh. HaChodesh means the laws of Korban Pesach, but it also begins, this is the parasha that we should have read this past Shabbos, but that's the parasha that begins with the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a nation, which is the mitzvah of proclaiming the first day of every month, Rosh Chodesh, making the calendar following the lunar cycle, as the Jewish calendar is, and having that concept of the Rosh Chodesh, the holy day of Rosh Chodesh, at the beginning of every month. So those are the four parashiyot. But nothing's by chance, and the fact that we read these four paragraphs leading up, these four portions leading up to Pesach, has a very deep significance, and many commentaries talk about it from different angles and different perspectives. One of the ways to explain it is as follows. Pesach is about freedom. Freedom means, as we said before, inner freedom. It means going beyond ourselves, going beyond our limitation, and going beyond being trapped in our own personal prison. And in a very interesting way, these four prisons, these four parashiyot, these four portions, represent the exodus from four different types of prisons that we have. And let me try and sort of share it with you and go through it with you. So the first one is the prison of money and material pursuit. Now, God should give everyone abundance. We should give everyone lots of parnasa, lots of comfort, and we should all have peace of mind and peace of body and everything that we need. But we also know the test of wealth and the test of comfort comes with being greedy, it comes with pursuing and being obsessed with material pursuit, financial pursuit and pleasure, and that becomes a prison. We become trapped. As the Talmud tells us that the one who says he has 200, the one who has 100 wants 200, the one who has 200 wants 400. In other words, it becomes, if it's the whole focus of who we are, it's never enough. We become trapped in that prison of material pursuit. Which is why the first portion we read leading up to Pesach is the portion of Shkalim. It's the portion of the half shekel, reminding us that the wealth that God gives us is a gift, reminding us that the wealth that God gives us is for a purpose. It's not just for us to enjoy and have pleasure, it's for a purpose. The half shekel is about giving away. It's about understanding that like a half shekel, we're incomplete unless we donate, unless we give to others, unless we support others. Not only financially, but in every way. To give of ourselves, to give of what we have, to use it for good, to use it for a purpose, to use it for a higher mission. So that's the portion of Shkalim, leaving that prison of being trapped in our own greed, in our own temptation, but rather using the gifts that God gives us for purpose and for meaning. The second is the prison of Amalek, the prison of ego and power. The Jews leave Egypt, they're on the way to a mission, and Amalek gets in the way. What's the spiritual Amalek? The spiritual Amalek is what gets in the way of us all. Our own ego, our own apathy, our own skepticism. In order to grow, in order to be free, we have to tap into purity. We have to understand that there's a force of Amalek within us that is a skeptic, that is cynical, that is egocentric, that holds us back, pours cold water on our enthusiasm. To be free, we have to be passionate. To be free, we have to have drive. We have to really want to grow and go beyond ourselves. And that's why the second portion we read is the portion of Amalek, understanding that the Amalek within us is that enemy, that prison that we have to be free from and get rid of. Part of how we do that is the third prison. I said the third portion that we read is the portion of Parah Aduma, the red heifer. Now we know that in the Torah, and I just want to sort of go through this quickly, in the Torah we have three different types of mitzvot, which can be subdivided into two. We have the mitzvot that make sense, that are logical, rational mitzvot, like don't steal, don't kill, that's logical ways of living. Then there's another type of logical mitzvot called Eidut, which is the ones that make sense, like eating matzah on Pesach. In other words, we wouldn't have thought of it ourselves maybe, but once it's given to us, it comes with a system, it comes with logic, it comes with a rationale. And then there's the mitzvot called the chukim. The chukim are those mitzvot which have no specific rationale, have no specific explanation. Why? God gave us these mitzvot for us to understand that we have to sometimes surrender and be subservient to what is higher than our own logic. We tend to think that our rationale, our intellect, our cognitive ability is the be-all and end-all of everything. It's not. The human logic, the human rationale, the human mind is very limited. Keeping the chukim reminds us that we need to sometimes go beyond who we are. We need to go beyond our limitation and to tap into something which is a little bit higher. Now, of the chukim itself, of those irrational mitzvot itself, the most irrational one was the red heifer. So much so that King Solomon, the wisest of all men, said that he was able to work out the explanation. He was able to understand the rationale behind all of the mitzvot, including the chukim, except for one. When it came to the parah adumah, it's so complex and it's so cryptic and it's so esoteric, it's so like sort of not tangible, that actually he said, Amarti achakma v'hirachaka mimeni, I said I was wise, he said about himself, but this is distant from me, I cannot work this out. So reading the parah adumah reminds us that the mind, as powerful as it is, and it's the mind that allows us to change our thinking and to sometimes become free, but it's the very mind who can sometimes imprison us to be stuck in a certain pattern of thinking and not to go beyond our mind. It's a mind which can incarcerate us into thinking that the way I think is the way it is and I cannot change. So we read the Parah Adumah, we read the red heifer to remind us that we need to go beyond our own mind, we need to be free from the prison of the mind. And then finally, the fourth one is the one of HaChodesh, the one that tells us the mitzvah of sanctifying time. Time can be the biggest prison in many, many ways. We always have to understand what controls who. Time management is very important, but who controls who? Do we control our time, or does our time control us? I've told the story before, but I remember once when I was really working on time management. And I was getting really good at making schedules, at giving enough time for each thing and being really organized. And I'd sort of read stuff on time management, and I was going to a course and I was really good at it. And then I was driving around the block because I had to be somewhere, and there was no parking, as sometimes happens in Sydney. And I was driving around the block a few times and there was just no parking anywhere. And then I saw a parking spot that I thought would be good, and suddenly the panel beater shop that is on the corner took one of his cars and parked in that parking spot. And I'm not proud of this, but I'll tell you what, you know, I normally tell only stories that worked, but this time I'm telling you a story that didn't work. And I pulled up and I pulled down the window and actually lost it with him. And then reflected later and realized my time management was really good, but time was controlling me and I wasn't controlling time. Because what I thought time management was to control my time. And that's not what time management is. Time management, real time management, is to make every moment count. Even the moments that don't go the way we think they should go. Because we plan a day, and it's good to have good time management plans and be organized and have diary entries for everything that's going to happen during the day, but it doesn't always happen. And it doesn't always happen, not in our control. And we need to understand, HaChodesh Zalachem, God tells us the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a nation is make every moment count. Sanctify time. Every experience, every day that you wake up in is a day that you can make work, as we spoke about last week, in terms of Jewish mindfulness. Every day that we wake up, that's a day that can really work. That's a day that we can give meaning and purpose, regardless of the circumstances. So I say these, I'm sharing with you these four prisons because they're so relevant now. Right now, it's a time where I think everyone agrees that it's a bit of a wake-up call. It's a bit of a time to reflect. Bill Gates wrote a beautiful article on this, telling us to remind ourselves about our value system, to remind ourselves of what we're actually doing. To go back to the very, very first one, now's a time to really focus more on our values than to focus on the things that we have and the comforts that we have. Now's a time, this year's a time, to focus on how meaningful the Seder is going to be rather than how social it's going to be or how beautiful the table is going to be set. All good things, but not as a focus. It's really a time to live by our values more than we live by the things that we have. It's a time to be passionate. It's time to not let our egos get in the way. It's a time that we're spending a lot of time with other families, and we really need to look at, are we making space for other people? A lot of us are confined with young children in a very small space. It's a really good time to examine ourselves. Are we taking up space, or are we letting other people have space? Are we giving up? Are we filled with drive and passion and enthusiasm to make this time work? Or are we skeptic? Or are we cynical? Or are we sort of creating doubt? Are we changing the ways we think? Are we re-examining our value system? Are we re-examining what really counts? And most importantly, that last one, are we making every day count? You know, there's a famous thing, and I've shared this with you before. When Abraham was getting older, our first patriarch, the pasuk, the verse says, "Va'Avraham zaken baba yamim." And Abraham was getting old. Baba yamim, he was coming with his days, which is like an expression of getting old. And the commentaries ask the question, why the double expression? We understand, Avraham zaken, he was getting old. What does it mean, baba yamim? What does it mean, he was coming with his days? But we know the translation of that is that getting old and coming with your days are two separate things. Sometimes a person can be older, but he hasn't come with all his days. The commentaries explain that when Abraham was old, he was also Baba Yamim. He came with every day. He could account for every day. He made every day work. He made every day meaningful. We're living through a time now where this is such an important concept, to not be controlled by the circumstances of time, but for us to control our time. And to get up in the morning and to say, this day is not going to be the way I expect it to be. This day is going to be very different to the way I thought it was going to be a few weeks ago. But yet the circumstances are different, but I'm not different. My values aren't different. I can make this day work. Parshat HaChodesh, sanctifying time, sanctifying each day. So these are the four prisons which we need to learn to leave and coming up to Pesach, and especially during the time that we find ourselves in now. But let's go now to the Seder itself. Now the Seder itself has many mitzvot, many important things to do, many important things that we can tap into. And I want to highlight, I mean, there's a mitzvah of telling a story, saying the Haggadah, the mitzvah of drinking the four cups of wine, and so on and so forth. But I'm going to focus on a particular passage of the Seder, which highlights particular mitzvot. So it's a passage which talks about the three key mitzvot of the Pesach night. Two of which we do today, one we can't do because we don't have a temple, but we still talk about it and we discuss it and analyze it. And it comes to the passage in the Haggadah which we say Rabban Gamliel taught us that if we don't focus on these three key things, we haven't really experienced the Seder, we haven't really tapped into what the Seder is really all about. What are those three things? The three things are Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. Pesach means to eat the Paschal lamb, the Paschal sacrifice that was brought on the day before Pesach in the times of the temple. Today we don't have a temple, so we have the shank bone on the Seder plate to commemorate that sacrifice, and we also eat the afikoman, the matzah at the end of the meal to commemorate how they would eat the meat of the lamb and the korban Pesach together with the matzah at the end of the meal. The second mitzvah is the mitzvah to eat matzah. It's a mitzvah to eat matzah every on the first night of Pesach and then ask for on the two nights of Pesach. And then there's the maror, the mitzvah of eating the bitter herbs. So what does that mean? What does that mean in terms of the experience of the Seder and experiencing freedom and tapping into the ability to be free, choosing to be free from within? How does it all work? So the first is Pesach. And there's many angles to this, but I'm going to share with you one. It's a formula. Pesach highlights, on the one hand, that we're part of a community, we're part of a whole, but yet Pesach also highlights and emphasizes the power of the individual. How so? In the time of the temple, there were many types of sacrifices. And for the purpose of this discussion, I want to divide them into two. There's what we called community sacrifices and individual sacrifices. So the community sacrifices, for example, in the temple every day, every morning, every afternoon, there was a sacrifice brought to represent the community. On Shabbat, there was an extra one called Musaf, which is why we daven Musaf on Shabbos. And community sacrifices had particular characteristics. They were the obligation of the community. They were paid for by a communal fund, and they were brought by the Kohanim representing the nation as a whole. Then you had, and also they were also on specific days. So for example, Shabbat had its sacrifices, Yom Kippur had its sacrifices, every day had its sacrifices. There were special dates that had special community sacrifices. Then there was individual sacrifices, which were very different. These were sacrifices brought on no specific date. So for example, they were brought, let's say if someone transgressed a particular transgression, they would bring as an atonement, or if someone just wanted to bring a present to God, so to speak, they would choose a day and do it. There was a sacrifice when a woman gave birth, which depended on each woman individually. Various different individual sacrifices that were brought by individuals, paid for by the individual, and it had no specific date, that had nothing to do with anyone else's sacrifice. Those are the two types of sacrifices. The Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb, that was brought in Egypt before they left Egypt, and subsequently every year in the temple, was a strange korban. It was a hybrid. It had characteristics of a communal sacrifice and characteristics of individual sacrifice. It had the characteristics of a communal sacrifice because everyone had to bring it on the same day. That's like a communal sacrifice. But yet there was an individual obligation. It was brought by the individual. It was brought by the person who had to bring it, him and his or her family had to partake in the lamb, have Seder together, and have the sacrifice. So it had characteristics of an individual, characteristics of a community. And that is exactly why it was the sacrifice given to the Jewish people, which is commemorated now through the shank bone and the afikoman. And that's why we reflect on it all the same. It was given to the Jewish people as a foundation for their freedom. Because God says to each individual, you need to know that as you become free, you need to know two things. You cannot do it alone. You're part of a community, you're part of a whole, but you're also an individual. And never underestimate the power of an individual. You know, the Talmud tells us that merubah midah tovah, which means when something happens in the negative, we need to know that it is all the more powerful in the positive. If we just have a look at what we're going through now, it started by maybe one person. Maybe one person caught a virus, a contagious one, a negative one. And it spiraled very, very quickly in a very, very short time. It had an incredible negative ripple effect and continues to do so, which is why the fight is on to contain it, to affect the entire world. One little invisible, almost invisible, microscopic negative entity started with one individual and has had a ripple effect and impacted on the entire globe. That's amazing. But the Talmud says what is true in the negative is much more true in the positive. We must never, ever fall back into complacency or despair or despondency and think, what difference does it make if I do this? What difference does it make if I make this day meaningful? What difference does it make if I pick up the phone and find out if someone is okay? What difference does it make if I smile at someone? What difference does it make if I pray a little bit, if I study a little bit, or I do one little more mitzvah? What difference does it make? And the answer is, it makes a huge difference. Yes, you're not doing it alone. You're not alone. You're part of a community. And you should be part of a community, and we should be part of the whole. But don't underestimate your individuality. Don't underestimate the power of what you do. That is the first step to becoming really free. Go beyond your comfort zone, because what you do counts. What someone else does is what they need to do. But what you do, the little step that you take, the first step to freedom that you take, is unbelievably powerful. It can impact the entire world. It can have a ripple effect in no time. You never know what you're going to achieve. You never know the impact. Sometimes you might find out, sometimes not. But whatever good thing that we do, it has a tremendous impact. A far-reaching impact, much, much more powerful than the negative. The second is the concept of matzah. Matzah is the power of surrender. Matzah is all about freedom. Matzah is all about setting aside our own ego, not rising, and just surrendering. We can only achieve freedom if we surrender. Surrender not in a negative sense, surrender in a positive sense. We can only achieve freedom if we realize our own limitations, if we acknowledge our own weaknesses, if we acknowledge our own self-centeredness, if we acknowledge that there's a much higher being above us, that there's a God, that there's the human intellect is so limited that we need to be able to say, I'm yours, I'm putting myself in your hands. It brings calmness, it brings liberation, it brings a sense of freedom, it brings a sense of trust, a sense of faith, to know that we're not doing this alone, we're in God's hands, it's His plan. We need to do our bit, but we have to trust that He's looking after us. Subscribe to His moral code. Surrender to His direction. That's the whole concept of matzah. That's why matzah is the key food on Pesach night, because it's the food that we ingest and we tap into the energy of true freedom, and true freedom can only come when we free ourselves from ourselves. And that is what matzah is all about. As we know, that's the difference between chametz and matzah. Chametz rises. Chametz is a negative sense of self, putting ourselves out there in a negative way, in an arrogant way, in an egocentric way. Matzah is about going, freeing ourselves from ourselves, going beyond ourselves and surrendering to something much greater and much higher than ourselves, making us stronger and even more powerful. And the third is maror, the bitter herbs. It's interesting when we sit down to the Pesach Seder on Pesach night, we eat the bitter herbs. We don't just celebrate freedom. We acknowledge the bitter times. We acknowledge the pain. Because you can only become free when you know what you're freeing yourself from. I want to relate that to what we're doing, what we're going through now. We're going through a painful period. The world is going through a painful period. That is true. That is not to be denied. And the way we free ourselves in terms of personal freedom, the way we become optimistic and positive and passionate and full of faith and hope and happiness, is not by going into denial. It's not by denying what's happening. That's not freedom. Freedom means that you have a challenging situation, you free yourself from it. Freedom means to go out of a prison, but you need to acknowledge that you're in a prison to begin with. So we eat maror, because when we eat the matzah, we also need to eat maror, because we need to know what is it that's holding us back. Each of us, at the end of the day, we talked about some general prisons, but each of us have our own personal prison. Each of us have our own personal weaknesses and shortcomings and inhibitions that hold us back, that leave us in our own personal Egypt, our own personal Mitzrayim. As you know, the word Mitzrayim comes from the word Meitzar, restrictions, constrictions. So we need to acknowledge, and as we're going through now, we need to be sensitive, we need to acknowledge our pain, we need to acknowledge the pain of others. We need to acknowledge the challenge, and yet work through it, and yet say that we have the ability to become free and to go beyond the challenges, and not to define ourselves by them, but to actually be free in the situation, to make every day count, to help people, to connect to people, to give, to live by values, even in challenging experiences and challenging situations. So those are the three key mitzvahs of the Seder: Pesach, Matzah, Maror. Pesach is, don't forget the power of the individual. Matzah, we need to surrender. And Maror, we need to know what we are freeing ourselves from. Finally, I want to talk about the four cups of wine and the emphasis on wine. Because wine has a lot of prominence in the Jewish tradition, particularly on Pesach night. There's no other time we actually are commanded to drink four cups of wine. And of course, as we've mentioned before, the four cups of wine correspond to the four expressions of redemption, where God said to Moses, I will take you out, I will save you, I will redeem you, and I will take you as a nation. So on Pesach night, we celebrate the freedom by drinking four cups of wine. So why wine? We can talk about the four cups of wine, that's a different discussion, but why wine? So we know that wine has a particular symbolism. In Hebrew, we know that every word has a gematria, has a numerical value. Every letter has a numerical value. The numerical value of yayin, wine, the Hebrew word for wine is yayin, is 70. That is exactly the same numerical value as the word sod, secret. What's the definition of a secret? A secret is something that is hidden, that is buried beneath something, that needs to be discovered, needs to be decoded. The Talmud tells us, Nichnas yayin yetze sod. When wine goes in, the secret comes out. Which on a superficial level, that's not always good news. But it means the symbolism of wine is uncovering a secret. In fact, wine itself symbolizes that very concept. What is wine? Wine comes from a grape. On the surface, if you go to a grape, if you buy a grape in a fruit store, it's just a regular fruit. It's nothing amazing. It's just a fruit like all other fruits. A good fruit, but like all other fruits. And yet, it has within it the potential, hidden potential, secretive potential, to squeeze it, to extract the juice, and to process that juice, and to produce one of the most finest beverages, and the beverages is considered most prominent from time immemorial. Something very powerful that brings joy, that brings simcha. On Pesach night, we drink wine. Why? Because freedom is only possible to free ourselves from the limitations of our mind, to free ourselves from all our other constraints and prisons, is only possible when we connect to the very secret of who we are. We connect to the depth of our neshama, the depth of our soul. Because whatever challenges we might have, whatever personality weaknesses we might have, whatever negative circumstances we might be in, whatever challenging times we might be going through, there's always one part of us that is pure. There's always one part of us that has a divine energy to it, and that's the spark at the very essence of our soul, the depth of our soul that is pure, that is strong, that is infinite, that can never be damaged, that can never be corrupted, as we've spoken about many, many times. And when we access that secret, when we access that depth of that soul deep within us, that's how we can then free ourselves from all the other parts of who we are that have perhaps been damaged, or all the other challenging circumstances that we're living through. Because it's that spark that is at the very core of our existence, that is the godly spark. It's that spark that gives us a focus. It's that spark that gives us a compass. It's that spark that gives us a godly drive to seek meaning and purpose, to do another mitzvah, to become a better person, to strengthen our relationships. That's where it all comes from. That's where it begins, from inside out. And on Pesach night, particularly when we want to celebrate freedom, we need to drink a lot of wine. We need to access, dig very deep. And Yetzer Sod, we need to reveal the secret, the sod, the 70, the secret of our existence, the depth of our soul, which is the foundation and the cause and the force that makes true inner freedom possible. So we're going through interesting times. We're going through challenging times. The world is going through a challenging time. There's no better time to focus on the concept of freedom. There's no better time to reflect on this idea that freedom has nothing to do with what's happening around us. Freedom has to do with ourselves. And that drive, therefore, to free ourselves from anything that might be holding us back and to make every day a free day. Make every day a day that we can do it. We can go beyond the constraints and make every day count with meaning and purpose and greatness and depth. We do it through accessing the depth and secret of our soul. We do it consciously through surrendering, through understanding the power of each individual, through acknowledging the challenge so we know what to be free from. And hopefully the preparation to Pesach and the energy of Pesach will help us go through this even more and bring with it the true freedom that we all want to experience. But I want to just end off with one very important concept, right? This is sort of a call to action in a way. Just coming up to Pesach. We've talked about matzah, so I want to highlight something really, really important. Besides putting extra effort the next few weeks, extra effort to do more, to create more meaning, whether it's creating deeper connections between people, whether it's maybe studying some more at home virtually, but studying some more, going online, whether it's doing another mitzvah. I want to highlight one particular mitzvah, one particular thing that's perhaps so important, and particularly important in the times that we're going through. And that is the mitzvah of eating matzah on Pesach night. I want to just explain it. During the 7 days of Pesach, there's actually no obligation to eat matzah. There's just a prohibition to eat chametz. You can't eat bread, so if you want something that's got carbs, you've got to eat matzah instead. So there's no mitzvah to eat matzah, no obligation to eat matzah, there's just an issur, there's a prohibition of eating bread, so therefore we eat matzah. However, on the first night of Pesach, and in the diaspora, in this, both nights of Pesach, there's an actual obligation to eat matzah. To eat matzah, let me explain how the mitzvah works. To eat matzah means to eat at least once during the night. I mean, we eat matzah a few times during the night, but at least once to eat matzah, a big piece of matzah. It's called a kazayit, a big piece of matzah, and to eat it quickly, within a certain amount of time, like 7 minutes. And that is the mitzvah. We make a special blessing over that mitzvah. And that mitzvah is performed by eating what we call shmura matzah. Shmura matzah means matzah that's baked in a particular way. It's baked specifically for the mitzvah. It's baked with special precautions and supervision. And it's important to eat the whole of Pesach. We don't have to eat shmura matzah. Some people do. But if we eat regular matzah, that's kosher on Pesach, of course. But on the night of Pesach, 2 nights of Pesach, we need to eat shmura matzah. A lot of people that choose, of course, on the first night of Pesach, the second night as well, to eat shmura matzah, which is hand-baked, the way it was always done from the time that the Jews left Egypt. So those round hand-baked ones. So I want to suggest that as we go into Pesach, I want to tap into the energy of freedom. That we make sure to have shmura matzah for the Seder and fulfill this mitzvah by each person around the Seder table eating a big piece of matzah in that appropriate time. Now I want to just add something very amazing. The Zohar tells us, the Zohar talks about this, about the matzah, the first night of the matzah, the second night, but essentially what the Zohar says is that matzah brings two things. Matzah is called michle dimheimenuta, the bread of faith, and michle asvata, the bread of healing. The bread of faith, because when we eat the matzah, the shmura matzah, it's spiritually and kabbalistically we are taught, and now's not the time to go into why, but it strengthens our faith. The very act of eating matzah, the mitzvah of eating matzah, strengthens our faith. And eating matzah brings healing. These are two critical things that we all need right now. Right now we need to strengthen our faith and we need the world to have healing. So I want to suggest that we all perhaps choose this mitzvah, that when it comes to Pesach, to make sure to perform this mitzvah. Now I know supplies are a bit short, but I have access to quite a bit of shmura matzah. I'm going to ask everyone, if you don't have shmura matzah for the Seder, please contact me. Either contact the office, 9365-4421, or contact me and we'll get you shmura matzah. We'll do it appropriately, of course. We'll have it delivered. We'll leave it by your door. We will keep the full extent of the precautions of social distancing, as we should do and as is appropriate. But we need to get you matzah so that you're able to fulfill this mitzvah, particularly this year. So I just want to end with that. Please, give me a call. Or give the office a call, send me an email, tell me you want shmura matzah for the Seder, and I will source some for you, make sure you have, and make sure on Pesach night, both nights, that during the Seder, you eat matzah, everyone eats a large piece of matzah quickly, and has in mind, reflecting while you're eating the matzah, on why we're eating the matzah, meditate while you're eating the matzah, to understand that we're doing that to connect to the energy of freedom, to become truly free, to choose freedom from within. And Once again, I want to wish everyone, this is the end of this series. We're going to have still a number of things for the next couple of weeks leading up to Pesach. We've got a model Seder on Monday night, which will be online. You can tap into it. We've got lots of different things happening. So please watch all the emails and updates, because right now, more than ever, it's great to be able to connect, even though we cannot do virtually. But in the meantime, I wish everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a very, very kosher and happy Pesach. And let's hope we'll celebrate freedom together. And let's hope that very, very soon this whole situation we're in now will pass very quickly, and we'll experience the true redemption, not just to go back like before, but even better than before. And hopefully we're able to see the coming of Mashiach